We ain't going out like that. Watch me go and bounce right back. Cause we ain't going out like that, no. We ain't going out like that. We ain't going out like that. Watch me go and bounce right back.
A senior writer for ESPN.com, Lyon McGee is the co-host of Marty and McGee, which airs on SEC Network and ESPN Radio. He's also a contributor across high-profile studio programming, including SportsCenter, SEC Nation, SEC Now, College Football Live, College Game Day, and more. He's the author of multiple publications, including Sidelines and Bloodlines, A Father, His Sons, and Our Life in College Football, which we'll talk about in a little bit. He started with ESPN in 1994, working on the production staff. He has 5 Sports Emmys in all. I'm running out of breath, Ryan. I'm pleased to welcome to the show Ryan McGee. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
My publicist wrote that. No, it's great. It's so good to be here. It's good to see you. You and I always see each other at games in like 20-second increments. You're going this way and I'm going that way. So it's good to actually sit down and chat.
Yeah. Well, I obviously want to talk about bowl games, talk about the visit you just had with our membership, which was very special. We appreciate you doing that. First, I want to talk about your early career a little bit. I think there's a lot of, you probably get hit up as much as I do with young people in sports who want to get into it. How do I do it? All that. But, you know, it's always good to hear people's stories. When you've been with ESPN for a while now, but take us back. What was your first big break in sports media?
Well, you know, it goes back to, and we'll talk about it. My dad was a college football referee and fisher, and he would work. We lived in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the rule is if you live in a certain city, you can't officiate like the home team games.
Yep, I know that.
So you can't do your alma mater. You can't, your kids' alma mater. You can't do, you know, where you live. We lived in Raleigh, so dad would work North Carolina State scrimmages all the time. And I would go to these scrimmages as an 11, 12-year-old, and I realized very quickly I didn't want to be an official. Like I went, and I knew I wasn't going to be big enough to be a player. I probably wasn't smart enough to be a coach. But I looked on the sideline, and it was all these reporters and newspaper people and photographers and support staff. And I'm like, well, all these people are – but this is their job to get to go to games. And so that became my focus. And I would – as a student at Tennessee, let's say CBS was coming into town to televise a Tennessee football game, I would go to the TV compound as a student and just knock on the door. What do you need? And usually they'd pay me with a sandwich and a T-shirt, and I'd hold a microphone on the sideline, or I'd keep stats in the broadcast booth or wherever, and was very, very fortunate. Timing's everything. ESPN started ESPN2. They needed people. They needed entry-level people, and I got an interview, and, you know, I mean, knock on wood, they hired me, and they haven't fired me yet, so we'll see.
I always think that everybody's kind of known for something, right? So in your job, people could call you a journalist, on-air personality, writer,
yeah,
right? When I think of you, I think of you as a storyteller.
I
really do. How did your early production experiences, and I guess probably your love of storytelling, lead you to being that?
Well, I grew up like as a newspaper junkie. My grandfather worked for the Richmond County Daily Journal in Rockingham, North Carolina for 70 years. Started as a kid, no child labor laws.
For how many years?
70 years. You know, no child labor laws in 1910, you know. And he worked at the newspaper, in fact, in my office. You and I were talking about tchotchkes. I have an old printer's drawer that came from his desk. Because he had a little kiln and he would make the print, you know, make the typeset, yeah, and all this stuff. This is the 1920s. And I have a drawer and it's full of all, you know, lapel pins and all these little things from games over the years. But, you know, I grew up devouring newspapers and Sports Illustrated and Sport Magazine. And, you know, I would travel with my father and read the great sports columnists all around the country. This is pre-internet, right? And so I think that's where I kind of learned it. You know, I love Louis Grizzard and I loved, you know, all these great sports writers, Dick Schaap, all these great sports writers around the country. And so, you know, you learn to be, I think, an athlete by watching other athletes. And I think you learn to be a writer or a storyteller by reading and listening to the great storytellers. So that's the best compliment you could possibly give me. So that's really where it came from. And then when I started ESPN, you know, as a young production assistant, running teleprompter and cutting highlights for SportsCenter, and I was working with Bob Leak, and I was working with Chris Fowler had just moved over from Scholastic Sports America.
I remember that
with hosting the beginning of College Game Day, and I used to travel with Steve Cyphers was our reporter for College Game Day, and I would learn from those folks, especially the great writers. Whether you're on TV or on the radio or whatever you do, podcasts, whatever, writing is still, even if it's spoken word, writing is the fundamental foundation for all of it. And so I learned from a lot of really, really great storytellers.
I think writing in general, communicating is kind of a lost art today with younger people, especially. Through all those experiences, was there, you may not have an answer to this, but was there one moment or event that made you really clinch in your mind, hey, this is what I want to do with my career?
Yeah, and honestly, it kind of happened before, I was even in high school. When I was 13 years old, my dad, again, was an ACC official at the time, Big East later with your guys, and I got my first sideline credentials when I was 13 years old. And it was North Carolina at Virginia, top 10 football game. Coach Welch had just gotten Virginia rolling. This is North Carolina, all these great running backs. Dick Crum was a coach there. And I still have a picture framed in my office, and it's in the book you're talking about. Barry Word, who went on to be an all-pro running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, he scored the game-winning touchdown, dove over the pylon for Virginia to beat North Carolina. I took a great picture of Barry Word in the air going over the pylon. What you don't see is that Barry Word cleaned my clock. The linebacker that missed on the hit cleaned my clock, got him Micah Moon. But I just remember standing up and thinking, this is the greatest. I was young, right? You rubber, bounce off the turf, I'm fine. But I'm like, this is the greatest thing in the world. And people are being paid to do this, you know? So that was kind of my moment. Like, this is what I want to do. I'm a writer, but I think TV is magical. Like, I was very fortunate in high school. I had a TV production class that I took. I went to school, studied broadcast journalism. So being able to meld all that together, when I was 13 and got my clock cleaned by a Tar Heel linebacker, that's when I was like, how do you get paid to do this?
It knocked your future career into it.
Knocked something loose in my brain that made me think I want to do this for a living.
Out of all the stories you've written and produced, do you have a favorite, something that's really stuck with you?
I do, and it doesn't really have anything to do with college football, but I at ESPN the magazine, they used to love to take me and just kind of parachute me into stories and situations I wouldn't normally cover. Go interview the Steinbrenner family or go and do something with a snowmobile racer. But I went to Jamaica and spent a couple of days with Usain Bolt. And what I saw wasn't just, the fastest man in the history of the world, but it was also someone who took very seriously, his role as the face of his nation, of Jamaica. And there, all the accusations of, is he cheating? He looked at me and said, I can't cheat. I remember he took his hand and kind of looked at Kingston, Jamaica, and go, I can't let all of these people down. And I'll be a Usain Bolt fan for life. And then my favorite column I ever wrote, I wrote a column my dad, again, he going back to dad, his last game was the 2009 BCS championship game. It was Florida and Oklahoma. My coworker, Tim Tebow, was in the game, and Florida won the national championship. And the magazine let me write a column about dad's finishing up this officiating career. So story, it was Usain Bolt. And column, it was definitely one of them with dad.
Well, that's a perfect transition. Let's talk about bowl games. You just finished joining our entire bowl season group. We're here at our annual meeting in Las Vegas. 420 people, everybody who works for a bowl game, does business with bowl games, people that really love what they do.
Yeah.
There may not be anybody who loves bowl games more than those guys, but if there is, it's you.
Oh, man.
So we appreciate you you joining that group. Where does this appreciation for bowl games come from?
I keep talking. My dad's name is Jerry McGee. I keep talking about him. And I was texting with him a minute ago. He's retired and he's on a cruise.
You should have brought him.
Well, he's on a cruise. I was like, I've just been told 9 different stories about you in this group. But my dad worked 24 bowl games as a college football official, 24 postseason games. And that was our holiday, right? It was finding pick a logo, and it was finding out. I told the story to the group about, it would be the first week of December and, the bowl assignments, the teams would receive their invitations.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't quite the pomp and circumstance we have now on the ESPN and all that. The teams would receive their invitations. And then once you knew where the teams were going, you could figure out what conference.
Yeah, sometimes you had to wait for the newspaper to come out the next day.
You did. Yeah, 100%. And but I remember it would be like the Monday after bowl assignments would go out for the teams, bowl invitations, and I would be sitting in class all day. You know, elementary school, middle school, high school, just hoping I'm going to get paged. Ryan, you have a call. And it might be the assistant principal, whatever, middle of World Civ. Come over here. Hand me a slip of paper. Your dad called. He got the Independence Bowl. Your dad called. He got the Rose Bowl. He got the Liberty Bowl. So we spent our holidays in San Diego and, you know, in Memphis and in Orlando and Jacksonville, you know, for bowl games. And we loved it. It was the most fun. My dad worked so many huge football games in his career, but we never had more fun than we did as a family. It was all four of us who go. Mom, dad, my brother, myself. We'd go to these bowl games, and we would get to experience it, you know, like the teams get to experience it. We'd go to the parade. We'd go to the luncheon. And, you know, there used to be a hospitality suite for the officials and their families. And, you know, there'd be an officials' dinner one night. You know, we go to the San Diego Zoo. And we go to, you know, it was fun. And my brother, I didn't talk about this in the group, but my brother and I love bowl games so much. Is you're talking about the paper. You know, you get the paper. Hmm. And the paper would say, all right, this is the bowl game schedule starting on December.
Yeah, we write that like a half page. It'd be, that's awesome. Yeah.
And so my brother and I would get post-it notes and we would write down the game, who's playing in the game, the date and the time, and where it was airing, ESPN, CBS, wherever. And we would put all of those on his bedroom door. And all during the holidays, you wake up and you walk over to the door and you go, all right, we got three games today starting at noon. And we pull those post-it notes down to get downstairs, and we had a big basket of footballs in our basement that Dad had collected over the years from different games and all. And the deal was, if you were watching the bowl games during the holidays, you had to hold a football and you had to tuck it. You know, if somebody, we have pictures of me and my mom who could care less about any of it. My mom sitting there with a football tucked, you know, watching the Holiday Bowl. And then eventually we pack up and go to whatever game Dad had. That's why I love it, because it's just the experience of it was just amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you experience in a way that a lot of coaches and their families do over there. Yeah, you talk to a coach, it's like for their family, like where are we spending Christmas? How's Santa Claus going to know where to go?
Exactly. Yeah. And Santa Claus came and saw us. You know, hotel rooms around the country. And my dad has a drawer full of watches and a drawer full of rings. I mean, I have a couple of his watches. I have a Gator Bowl watch that has the old Gator kicking the football with the football.
Yeah. Well,
I've got I have a Plymouth Holiday Bowl watch that I wear all the time. And this is from the 1986. And it's got the big humpback whale jumping out of the water. And, you know, he toured the Sega Las Vegas Bowl here in town one time. And he always tells a story about, you know, the stadium wasn't awesome, but they played the game. Yeah. But Dad and the officials getting dressed, and all of a sudden the door opens, and the Vegas showgirls that are going to, you know, come out for a pregame show, like, guys, you know, we got to change it to our costumes. We're like, all right,
if you have to,
yeah. So it was just story after story after story, and most of the time we were there, so, you know, sitting in the stands. And part of our routine was, you know, we would sit in the stands, and Dad and the officials would come out, and the first thing they'd do is they'd look for where we were. You know, where the officials' family. So I have pictures of Dad like pointing at us, you know, from the field, from the sideline before the game. So yeah, that was what I grew up with. And now I get to go to bowl games, sometimes for work and sometimes just to go. I took my daughter to her first game to the Citrus Bowl this year. She's a South Carolina student. And we got there early and did hospitality and saw a couple get married at halftime riding around on a flatbed trailer. The officiant was a giant Cheez-It. I mean,
not much more romantic than that.
Right? I mean, what else do you...
Looking for the ultimate bowling experience? Discover everything you need at GoBowling.com. Find local bowling centers, sharpen your skills with pro tips, stay updated with the latest news, and grab exclusive deals. Whether you're a seasoned bowler or just playing for fun, start the fun now. Visit GoBowling.com.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of things about how college athletics is evolving right now that I know you and I don't like. There's a lot of craziness going out there. But one of the things that people don't even talk about the most, because it's probably even down the pecking order of the issues, is with conference realignment, you know, a lot of the rivalries are going away. I think history and tradition is what college football is all about. It's what brings value. And I think bowl seasons is represents that history and tradition that we still hold on to. So you've talked about, you know, how meaningful bowl season is to you personally.
Yep.
How meaningful do you think it is still to this day to the sport in general?
I think it's wasn't that long ago we're having this whole conversation about, you know, do bowl games matter and why are we even playing them and why are there so many of them? I think that pendulum has completely swung. And I think we saw it in attendance, and I think we saw it in TV. I mean, I definitely saw it in TV ratings, and we saw it in buzz. And I think that it's because of what you're talking about, where people are starting to feel a little disconnected from the game that we all grew up loving. And you got your root for laundry, right? It's your alma mater, your granddad's alma mater, your tailgating, and all these things. But the fun is why we love it, and nothing's more fun than the bowl games. And I think that we saw that this year where people are leaning into that. And I think people thought the expanded playoff would water it down. I think it did the complete opposite.
It did.
We paid way more attention to more teams because they might have had a playoff chance. But now, so Ole Miss doesn't make the playoff. The nation knows these guys. The nation knows Jackson Dart. You know, and so when they play in their bowl game, everybody watches.
Yep.
You know, so I think that it's I think that it'll be interesting in the long term, but right now, you know, you and I both love baseball, right?
Yep.
And we lived through the 80s when the contracts got big, and what happened? People started going to card shows, and people started trying to find Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays and Whitey Ford and these guys. It was because they were looking for a connection to what they loved about the sport, and they felt like they were being left behind a little bit as fans, and I think that's happening with bowl games. I think people look at bowl games as, all right, I know what this is. And this looks pretty fun. And so, you know, why wouldn't I watch this? Why wouldn't I take family and go spend, you know, New Year's Eve, you know, like I did, you know, in Orlando and Citrus Bowl? I think the pendulum is swinging in a different direction that maybe people expect.
I think so, too. You know, we always try to say, look, the CFP and bowl season, they don't compete against one another.
No.
They together make college football's postseason, which I think for a lot of reasons is the best postseason in all of sports.
No question about
because
it.
Of the fun element. They're still playing for a national championship at one level.
Yep.
There's
something for everyone. If you just want to have a good time and you just want to see a goofy trophy and see a Pop-Tart bake himself, whatever, it's a lot of people. Right. It's a lot of people want to do better. Pop up from a Duke Smith. It's all right there. And then when you want to hunker down and watch a national championship game, you can do that too.
Yep.
I think the big thing is understanding what it means to the players that are on the field. And, you know, a lot of people work really hard to try to cheapen this thing. And listen, with the, you know, holdouts and transfer portal, I get all that stuff. If you go to a game and you guys, I'm not a big social media guy because, you know, not that fun anymore. But one of the best things I saw on social media was something that bowl season did on their account, which was the list of probably first round draft picks who opted to play in their bowl game. Mm-hmm. Travis Hunter won the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see more of that because I think guys are understanding. And I've talked to players who were at the very beginning of the opt out thing. Mm-hmm. Guys that are playing in the, you know, they're all pro guys now and they wish they played.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize it when you're 21, but when you're 30, you're like, man, I would do anything to ride on the bus with them.
How many guys will say later in life, thank God I didn't play in that bowl game?
Yeah, they won't.
None.
They won't.
None.
And a lot of them will have regret. I would say the opposite because you just don't realize in the moment when people are in your ear and when you're 21 years old, you think, well, it'll always be this way. That's not – when you talk to guys about athletes about back in the day, they don't talk about wins and losses. They don't talk about the great run they had. What they talk about is riding on the bus, being in the locker room, and being on the team. Even in the transfer portal, this transactional era, that still is important to people. And you see it at games. You see it when a team wins a bowl game and the emotion – or Western Michigan, you see the emotion on their face of, we earned this right to play in this game, and now I've got a ring I'm going to wear the rest of my life. And they don't really care what that means to you. They care what it means to them.
Yeah. Of all the bowl games you've seen, either as a kid with your dad or calling a game or whatever, what's your best memory?
My dad officiated in the 1990 Orange Bowl, and it was Colorado was number one. It had the Cinderella season. Colorado used some terrible football, and it had this amazing Cinderella season. dedicated to this quarterback they lost to cancer earlier in the year, Bill McCartney. And Notre Dame, I think, was number four. Their only loss was to Miami. Home stadium was the old Orange Bowl, which is where this game was. And NBC was televising the game, and it was a national championship game. And, you know, it's Notre Dame, right? And it's Colorado with Ralphie. And Tony Rice is a quarterback for Notre Dame. And my dad worked at Furman University. And my dad's job was to get the captains, and they walked out on the field. And my dad goes, "Hey, Rice, you from Woodruff, South Carolina?" He's like, "Yeah." He goes, "I'm from Traverse Rest." He goes, "What are we doing at the Orange Bowl?" You know, and just it felt so big, and it was so big, and it determined a national championship. And just being in the old Orange Bowl, which that place was falling apart, and it didn't matter because that was the Orange Bowl. And so that was the night that I had been to bowl games before, and I had experienced the fun at a smaller game. I certainly understood the importance of the Rose or whatever. But that Orange Bowl was kind of the perfect mix of the magic, right? You know, I was 19 years old. His dad's biggest game was the national championship, and there's Buffalo and the Leprechaun, and, you know, we're in the house that Don Shula built, and it's like, yeah
pretty good,
man. It gives me chills when I think about it, and that's still the feeling I get when I get to the stadium now.
Last question for you. If you could start your own bowl game, where would it be? What would it be called? Do you have a preferred title sponsor? Because I know you love the title sponsors.
I do. All right, so for years, my answer to that was Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
And that's why when literally the press release about the Myrtle Beach Bowl went out on a Saturday, it was the day we were recording Marty and McGee, and we were like, we have to work this bowl game. So we were the sideline reporters for the first two editions of the Myrtle Beach Bowl. But you know what? If they have one in Myrtle Beach and we got one in Boca – you know, we got one in kind of these touristy areas. You know what? I went to Tennessee. How about a Dollywood Bowl? And we could play it in a like Maryville College. He's got a cute little stadium up there. Get Dolly to come out and sing the national anthem. And we get the Pride of the Southland Mayor from Tennessee to come out and do the half. We get Lee Greenwood to do the halftime show. Yeah, they all have theaters there in Pigeon Forge, right? Can you imagine? Dolly and like a bunch of butterflies and pigeons.
What title sponsor are we going to pitch this to?
It's Dolly. We're going to call the Dollywood, the Dolly Bowl. We'll call the Dolly Bowl.
Okay.
Presented by Dollywood. We'll just. Or you know what? Even better, it'd be the Dolly Bowl because Dollywood's obvious, right? So we'll do the Dolly Bowl, and we got it'd be presented by like you know, Ripley's Aquarium, right? We'll do the Dolly sponsor, and we'll have a presenting sponsor underneath, and it could be like you know. Stella Parton's Hat House, or like you know the Apple Valley Diner. We had to pick some hillbilly golf. I had to pick some institution
of hillbilly golf
or Pigeon Forge. Yeah, so the Dolly Bowl.
All right, I like it.
Dolly,
I like
do it. This. My wife used to sing at Dollywood. I'll see if she's got some friends. Yeah. Can you imagine that? What would the halftime show?
I don't think I understood half of the things you were just saying now, being from the Northeast, but I've got to have to do some
more. I will say this. Every time I'm in Pigeon Forge, most of the people there are from the Northeast.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I lived in New England, everybody made fun of my Southern accent. I'm like, well, that's fine. We'll take your money. Because I see y'all in Gatlinburg and Myrtle Beach all the time. So, yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being here today. Appreciate you addressing our group, and even more so, appreciation. So much appreciation for everything you do for the sport of college football. You really add a lot to everything ESPN does and to the fan experience, the viewer experience. So thank you for all that.
No, thank you. I mean, you know, it's the attitude and the perception of what bowl games are as a whole has changed tremendously in the last several years. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that's about the time you showed up. So thank you for all that.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you for joining us on the Any Given Season podcast. Please listen to all of our past and future podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, and you can get you all your bowl season news at our website, bowlseason.com, and on social media at bowl season. Thanks for joining us.
This episode has been brought to you by Tappet. Understand how going cashless builds loyalty, engages fans, and boosts your bottom line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming. It's been a long, long time.